Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I have somebody on the channel, and depending geographically where you're watching this, you might have heard of this man, you might not have heard of this man. Anyone in the UK will have heard of this person. Anybody further afield might not have, but this person I'm interviewing today has had a very interesting career. He's had the highest of highs, he's had the lowest of lows, and he's had an incredible journey along the way. And I think it's going to be really fascinating for everybody to hear this man's story. I am, of course, talking about a bit of a legend in the UK magic community, the one and only Alex Lodge. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm very well. Thank you very much, Craig, for that introduction.
It's true, though, isn't it? I mean, you've had ups, you've had downs, you've had...
I certainly have indeed, yes. It's been a very interesting story to tell. Finally, from the horse's mouth, you can all hear what I've got to say of my side of things.
I'm so looking forward to delving into this, because at one point, you and me were fighting each other for who was the most controversial character in Magic. Like, at one point during my period where I was just purposefully pissing off magicians, you were right there with me, pissing them off in a completely different way. And we've both had that kind of love-hate relationship with the Magic community. I mean, there's no denying that you are a very talented performer. There's no denying that, you've achieved a hell of a lot in your career. But I think that you've been maybe a little bit misunderstood, and I think people have taken...
Absolutely. I think misunderstood is the word we're looking for.
I think that some stuff has been taken out of context, and I'm hoping... I mean, we haven't discussed this beforehand, and I purposefully didn't want to discuss this interview beforehand, because I didn't want to come into this skewed in one way or another. So I just said to you, and I'll openly say this to everyone watching this off camera, I just said, I've done no research into this at all. We're going to put the cameras on. We're going to go for it. We're going to see what happens. I've got questions that I want to ask. I've got stuff that I want to talk to you about. We're going to talk about everything. And I think this is the chance, right, for everybody to hear, like you said, from the horse's mouth, right?
That's right. This is it. Cool. Strap yourselves in, relax, and enjoy the next couple of hours.
Awesome. Brilliant. I'm excited for this. So, for those people, because there is a big audience to this channel, obviously I'm based in the UK, you're based in the UK. Like I said in the intro, everyone in the UK is going to have heard of you, you're infamous. However, 80% of the people watching this channel are from Canada, Australia, America. So for all of those people that are like, what's Craig talking about? Who is this Alex Lodge guy? Let's give them some frame of reference, first of all. So, question number one, let's talk about your origin story. Let's talk about how you got into magic, because you got into it from a very young age, didn't you?
Yes, I got into magic, and it is a very long origin story. So I grew up in a village called Oakley in a small town near Basingstoke. And like most magicians, I got a Paul Daniels magic set for Christmas. But my grandfather was also a magician, and he would show me magic tricks on the weekends and things like that. And it was a mixture of those things, the Paul Daniels magic set and my grandfather, that got me sort of vaguely into magic. I wasn't heavily into it until we went to London for a day out at like the museum. And then as a special treat, my family took us to Hamley's toy shop on Regent Street. And as we all know, in Hamley's toy shop, there is a section called Marvin's Magic. And I met a man called Bruce Smith, who did the dynamic coins and absolutely blew me away. And I begged my mum, I said, please, can you buy me this trick? And she was like, no, it's central London. It's really expensive. I was like, no, please, please, please. After enough begging, she bought me the magic trick. I took it home. I learned the dynamic coins. I took it to school. I showed all my friends in the playground. They were just as amazed as I was. And it became a regular thing. Each year, we used to go back to London for a day out. We'd go to Hamley's, and as a special treat, I could have a Marvin's magic trick. And so over the years, I collected all these Marvin's magic tricks and eventually had enough to do a school talent show. So I did the school talent show and I won it. And I thought, well, this is going very well. So I continued with my love of magic and it became an obsession. Like most magicians, you know, we all get very heavily influenced by our peers. And before I knew it, I had magic posters all over my room. Like most kids would have pop stars or rock stars, I had magic posters absolutely plastering the walls. And I started developing a competition act after seeing Lance Burton. I mean, Lance was a massive influence in my life because, you know, he did Dove Magic and I love Dove Magic. So I got doves and entered into magic competitions. So there was a competition called the Reading Junior Day. And I entered it the first year without the doves. I just did a thimble manipulation act and I came surprisingly second place. And I was completely taken back by it because I didn't expect to get anywhere, but I came second. And so the tradition was that the following year, the act that would come second would win it. Well, I eventually built the dove act and entered the second time and won first place. And the interesting story here is that the first ever magician to win the Reading Junior Day was by the name of Julian Butler, who now lives in the United States, originally from Oakley Village, the village I grew up in. And it came full circle because I ended up winning the last ever Reading Junior Day the year it stopped running. And so the first ever winner was Julian Butler. And the last ever winner was me, who, you know, we're both from the same village, which is just a massive coincidence. But yeah, there we go.
That's crazy. And how old were you when you won, when you were entering these competitions? How old were you at that point?
Yeah, so these are teen contests. And I was about 14 years old when I first entered and came second. And then about 15 years old when I won the Reading Junior Day.
And how old were you when you went into Hamley's and got your first magic set?
So I was probably about 10 years old when I got the dynamic points.
Right. So you've had like 5 or 6 years of like hardcore practice at this point.
Yeah.
Had you started doing gigs? Had you been one of these kids that like go out and do kids shows or something? Or is it literally you were embracing magic, you were learning and you were putting all your efforts into competitions?
Yeah, I was definitely putting all my effort into competitions. I wasn't even thinking about gigging. It was just like a massive hobby for me at the time. And, you know, besides schoolwork, all I would do is football and magic. So, you know, it was about the competitions and I was gearing up, getting ready to do the Young Magician of the Year competition that the Magic Circle run, because that was the big one. Mm-hmm. And before I did the Young Magician of the Year competition, I had a documentary. The BBC came and made a little documentary that's on YouTube called Alex Lodge's First Ever Television Appearance. If you want to see it, you can check it out. And that little documentary was me at home and then at the Magic Circle, and Dominic Wood was on it and Anthony Owen. And it was all about getting ready for the Young Magician of the Year competition.
And how did you do in the Young Magician of the Year?
Well, I did my dove act and it didn't go particularly well. And I had put everything into it and I really, really wanted to get through to the finals. And I remember getting the letter in the post and I opened it up. I was in my school uniform, ready to go to school. And I just saw the words unsuccessful. And I just burst into tears. I was so upset. I didn't make it through to the finals. I wasn't good enough. And I don't know how I went to school that day. I was just so upset, you know. So unfortunately, I didn't make it through to the finals of the Young Magician of the Year, but I still went and supported it. And funny enough, a juggler won it that year because they were looking for original acts.
Okay. Well, fair. Yeah, you know, sometimes it's the taking part that matters and getting that flight time and getting that experience.
Yeah, it was good experience.
At what point, Alex, because obviously you've been relying on magic to pay your bills for a very, very long time. At what point did you kind of go, You know what? This could be more than a hobby. I could actually do this for a living. Was it while you were in school? Or was it after you finished school?
Yeah, what happened was I got to year 10 in school and they offered us work experience. And like most kids would go off and do accountants or, you know, have a proper job. I thought I want to work in Hamleys for Marvin's Magic. So I wrote to Marvin himself and they gave me work experience in Hamley's toy shop for 2 weeks. And not only demonstrating the products, but I actually got to learn from Bruce Smith and the team themselves how to demonstrate them and sell them properly. And for 2 weeks, I traveled up to London and did my work experience for Marvin's Magic, which was an incredible at 15 years old. You know, it was like real magic. You know, we're talking like Billy Elliot stuff here. It was incredible. Like, this is back in the heydays of Marvin's Magic, when Marvin's Magic was slap bang at left hand side of the shop. It was top hats and, you know, all that type of thing. So it was really magical at the time. And I had a great 2 weeks doing Marvin's Magic, and it became my weekend job on the weekends after I'd, you know, gone back to school.
Oh, wow. Okay. So when you finished school, did you then go full-time into magic? Did you work for Marvin full-time? Like, what happened there?
Yeah, so when I left school, I did performing arts at Queen Mary's College Central Studios. Mm-hmm. And had the weekend job for Marvin's Magic. At the same time, I made friends with a young man called Stephen Frey, who we all know now as Dynamo. And Dynamo and I were very good friends in the early days before he was famous. We used to meet up at magic conventions. I used to meet him in London and we'd hang out. And sometimes I'd even stay over his flat in London. I used to sleep on his sofa when I was working at Marvin's Magic. And a little interesting fact is, and a story here, is that he was about to get his first television appearance and he was looking for a magical consultant. And he asked me, do I know anyone that's, you know, got experience, you know, because he wanted to do these big illusions like walking over the River Thames, etc. And I knew Paul Cook. So Dynamo and his manager arranged a meeting. And we had a meeting with Dynamo, his manager, and Paul Cook, myself. And I introduced Paul Cook, who was a magical consultant, to Dynamo and his manager. And, well, things just took off after then. He ended up walking across the River Thames. He did all these big illusions. So, yeah.
That's cool. That's brilliant. That's great. So at what point did you go full-time, Alex? At what point? You finished your degree?
Yes.
Your performing arts thing? Yes. Is that when you...
Yes. So I went full-time with Marvin's Magic after I'd finished college.
Okay.
And I was working there day in, day out, demonstrating. And I got an opportunity because Nickelodeon TV came into the shop filming Lynx around the store. Mm-hmm. And they came up to the Marvin's Magic stand and I was demonstrating and they filmed a bit with me. And I just said to them afterwards, Halloween's coming up. If you need a magician, then give me a call, and gave them my business card. So a couple of weeks later, I receive a phone call from one of the producers at Nickelodeon, and they said, would you like to come down to the studios and do some of your own magic on the presenters? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'd love to. So I went to the studios and did some magic on the presenters around Halloween time for Nickelodeon. And that was my first ever television appearance. I mean, before, I had a documentary before that, but, you know, first sort of international, you know, television appearance. So that was cool. But then after Marvin's Magic, I got the opportunity to go and work for the House of Illusion in Spain.
Okay, now before we get to the House of Illusion, because I've obviously interviewed Rodney on this channel. So before we get to the House of Illusion, you'd been doing gigs at this point, right? So you'd been, because obviously when we spoke about you entering the Young Magician of the Year, you said, oh, it was a hobby. When did you start gigging? Was it mainly close-up? Because a lot of people know you as a stage performer.
Yeah, so obviously with Marvin's, Marvin's Magic is primarily close-up parlor-type magic. And that was really how I got into close-up magic because, you know, I've always been known as a stage magician, but I've always done close-up magic, comedy magic, and illusions. But my first couple of gigs were really through Marvin's Magic, you know, kind of demonstrating on the stands. People would ask for business cards and you'd hand them out and you'd get a phone call and can you come to my wedding or whatever, you know. So there were a couple of gigs in the early days and, you know, it was slowly taking off, but I knew I wanted to do big things.
And is that one of the reasons why you decided to go to the House of Illusion?
Yes. So I auditioned for Rodney James Piper for the House of Illusion in Spain. And the first year I got rejected. I didn't get it. And I waited a year, carried on working at Marvin's. And then I auditioned again and got the gig. And for 6 months, I worked in sunny Spain at the House of Illusion, the first version of House of Illusion. A 50-seated theatre bar, and I got to do my Dove act every night, twice a night, and it was really good practice. And I had, you know, a good time working out there with the other magicians, and I got ready to enter the British Magical Championships.
Okay, right.
In Blackpool. So I was working back from
the house.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So the following year.
Before we get into that, because this is all fascinating, I want to ask you a question. Right. And I did say to you, I'm not going to pull any punches.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
I want to ask you a question at this point. We're now around about the period of time where I kind of was made aware of you. It was kind of around about this time, I think, at the championship. Because in Spain, you were working with my friend Max Francis, I believe. You guys.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And so that's about the same time, because I know Max really well.
Yeah.
When you came on my radar, I was like, who's this guy? And a lot of people are like, oh, that's Alex Lodge. Who's Alex Lodge? Oh, he does illusions. He does this, he does that. All right, cool. And I had so many people say to me, and let's just put this to bed right now, that you ripped off David Penn's look. Because you had a very similar look, obviously not now. Can I just address that? Because that's what everybody was saying. Yeah. And I kind of looked at you and I was like,
yeah,
you did look like, you know, like Dr. Evil, like mini me. you did kind of look like a mini David.
Little Penn. David Penn, yeah. And I know what you're saying.
Because I mean, you and David, like he does illusions and he does stage and you were doing illusions and you were doing stage. Yeah. What I mean, Was it a purposeful thing or was it just?
Well, no, it was complete coincidence. But this is back in the days when like pop music was huge and there were those boy bands with the blonde spiky hair. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a big craze at the time. There seemed to be quite a lot of magicians doing the blonde spiky hair thing. And obviously, Dave Penn was a massive influence to me. And I did look up to him and admire him because he was a massive success in the UK magic scene. I didn't intentionally copy him. I just generally had blonde spiky hair as well. And, you know, it was just a bit of a coincidence that I was like the mini David Penn at the time. So, yeah.
Because that might have, I don't want to say held you back. Mm. I don't mean held you.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
At all. But it might have been having that look that looks so similar to somebody that's so big.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, you know, I could have him.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't really copying him. Obviously, he was an influence because Dave was already on television. So, you know, he was already sort of influencing. And like Wayne Dobson had blonde spiky hair, you know, Dave had blonde spiky hair and I had blonde spiky hair. And obviously, you know, we all look up to those that we admire. You know, you've got Hans Klok with the long blonde hair as well. So, you know, I think, you know, we all get influenced by magicians we see on television. And like I said, it was a coincidence. But at the same time, you know, I was trying to do my thing. Dave was doing his thing. So, yeah.
Would it be fair to say that at this point in your career, you had a desire to be famous? Like you wanted to be because obviously you were putting yourself out there, you were trying to get on TV shows, you're winning championships, because there are some magicians that get into magic and they're just content doing their thing. There's nothing wrong with that. I've never had a burning desire to get on TV. You know, and that's fine. I'm just not ambitious in that way. And there's a lot of magicians that will just like go through their career not wanting to be the next Dynamo. Were you?
Yeah, absolutely. Dream as a kid of being famous, you know, I think most young people do, whether they're into magic or into music or into television, you know, yeah, I had dreams of being a famous magician, and, you know, things were starting to go quite well. You know, I was building up a good reputation, and, you know, moving on from the House of Illusion, when I came back, I started doing the UK holiday parks, and I got
there's no better way to get good on stage than doing holiday parks, because if you're not good, they'll eat you alive, man. For the people that aren't in the UK that don't know what a UK holiday park is, they can be the best audience in the world unless you suck, and then they can just be dreadful.
Yeah, so I was starting to build a good reputation. You know, I was doing pantomime, I was in Cinderella that was produced by Richard Cadell. You know, I was really starting to build this good reputation. I started doing the cruise ships, I was on Britney Ferries with an illusion show. And funny story actually about Britney Ferries is, if you know the ships, they go from the UK to France and back. And an assistant and I was on the ship doing the illusion show, and then one morning we decided to get off in France and have a look around and do a bit of shopping, as you do, and the purser told us, make sure you're back by 12 o'clock, and we went shopping and we got back to the port and we noticed that the ship was moving, and so we started running, and we got to the fence and the ship was, you know, taking off without us. And we couldn't believe it. The purser had told us the wrong time. And there was the ship with the smoke coming out the funnel. And we had missed the ship. And we are like, OMG, what do we do? So we run into the terminal. We speak to the people. All our stuff's on board. Even our passports on board. We just got crew passes. What do we do? They said, well, luckily, the ship is going to another port in France because it's changeover day with the other ship. And you can, you know, get a train to the other side of France. And so, like, we go to the train station, but unfortunately that day it was a national festival, so it was absolutely madness everywhere. The trains were packed, and to cut a long story short, we ended up getting a taxi from one side of France to the other side of France. Cost me about 300 euros. We got to the port, the ship came into port, we got back on the ship, got to the crew mess, and the band were like, hey, where have you guys been, in the cabin? And we were like, no, it's a long story, sit down.
Oh my gosh, that is crazy, that is mental. Let's rewind, let's go back to the championship. So you entered the British Magical Championships off the back of, of the back of going to the House of Illusion. I'm guessing you entered with your Dove act, right?
I did, yes. I entered the British Magical Championships in Blackpool with my Dove act and came runner-up, which is a great achievement. So I was very happy with that. And, yeah.
Very stressful place performing at Blackpool for all those magicians on that stage. Man, that's brilliant. So you're kind of... So you're in a situation now where... things are starting to happen for you, like you say, you're doing you're gigging regularly. Had you put your illusion show together at this point?
So I put the illusion show together for Britney Ferries. You know, I was already doing the ships, I was doing the holiday parks, and then I got a massive opportunity to do Princess Cruises, an American cruise line, and I went out to the States and did Princess Cruises for about 2 years. And like I said, things were going really well. I was living what most magicians would call the dream. And then I decided to do a television show called Dancing on Ice. And I'm sure you were going to bring this up.
You kind of got to, haven't you, really? Let's be honest, because this is the thing that everybody talks about.
So I was asked to do this show called Dancing on Ice, and I thought, what can I do? I thought, I know, I'll do the Heads Off Illusion.
Just so people understand, this is not the Dancing on Ice that we know. This is a thing that they bought out about many, many years ago off the success of Britain's Got Talent, I believe. And it was a talent show on ice. So it was the same sort of format as the old school Britain's Got Talent, but on ice. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, yes, that's right.
I just want people to think that you weren't like going there and dancing. It was a talent competition on ice.
I honestly don't know what I was thinking at the time, but I just thought, yeah, I'll do the heads off illusion. I'll take her head off in the box, skate around because I could ice skate, and then put her head back on and everything would be all right. So we got a phone call to say, can you come up to London at 4 a.m. in the morning? So me and my assistant made the journey at 3 a.m. in the morning, got to the ice rink and got ready to do this illusion on ice. And what we forgot was that, first of all, her hair was up. So that wasn't a good thing. And we were very tired because it was that early in the morning. And the second thing was the ice skates make you about 10 inches taller than you usually are. So we filmed the first take and it didn't work. The ice skates were making her too tall. Her hair was tied up. She couldn't get her head far enough down and her hair was sticking out the trap door. And unfortunately, we filmed it again, but they decided that they would show the take going wrong. And I can't explain how much this damaged my reputation. I got absolutely slammed by the magic community, and I still do today.
I want you to talk about this, but there's something that I need to say first of all, which is, as somebody who's done illusions, and you know, for many, many years, the heads off illusion was my signature piece when I was working with Russell and Anna Leeds. It's very easy for something like that to happen, not even taking into consideration skates. When you're dealing with a girl with long hair and you're dealing with this sort of illusion, stuff like this can happen through no fault of your own. You know, I mean, you can do all the rehearsals in the world, and occasionally it's kind of like for people watching this that are close-up magician, you can do a million double lifts, and occasionally someone's just gonna, you know, you're gonna do a double lift and it's gonna split, or you know, you're gonna drop a card or something. It doesn't matter how much practice, it can happen. And unfortunately, it happened to you, and you had the you then filmed it again. You insisted on filming it again, but it wasn't you that had that footage go out. I just want to bring that out. So what happened? You had the kickback, right?
Massive kickback. It ended up on Harry Hill's TV burp. He absolutely ruined everything I had worked for. And it was about to get a lot worse.
Very quickly, Alex, just because I just want to give people frame of reference who don't know who Harry Hill is. Harry Hill is a guy that basically... He does. Lots of things, but he has a TV show where he rounds up the news that happened over the course of that week, and he decided to highlight your performance on the ICE program. So he brought up this program, and they edited it in a way to make you look like a total dick.
Yeah,
that's basically what he did. He took, which wouldn't happen these days with the whole thing that goes on about reality TV and you can't bully contestants and stuff like that. This sort of thing would not happen these days, but yeah, he basically framed the whole thing and made you look...
I must say I am enjoying Dancing on Ice, Make Me a Star, which is not like Britain's Got Talent at all. No, because it's on ice. Judging by the fantastic magic act they showcased this week, I can't wait till the competition starts later in the year. He actually removed a lady's head, and I still have absolutely no idea where it went.
My name's Alex, I'm 23, I'm from Basingstoke.
And Hayley, I'm 20, and I'm also from Basingstoke.
We do an illusion on ice, and it's called the Heads Off Illusion, where I actually take Hayley's head off. Can you see her hair sticking out of her?
Yeah, a bit, yeah. Doesn't really need to be on the ice either, does it? Here, I'm far away.
I was the biggest pokey magic. My reputation overnight just went like that. And magicians were slagging me off left, right, and centre. Even my family didn't want to know me. I was a complete and utter embarrassment. So I turned to drink. and I lost all my work and my life was falling apart. I could no longer afford to pay the rent and I was in debt and I had the bailiffs knocking on my door. I was being made homeless in the wintertime and no one would help me. It was my worst nightmare come to life.
And that was off the back of this one moment on TV.
Yes.
This is what caused all. And your assistant was your girlfriend, is that right?
She left me. It was a nightmare. And then I had a phone call from Objective Productions, who were making a TV show called When Magic Goes Wrong. And they said they would pay me £600 to use the clip. So I said yes, because it would be just enough to get me a room for a month. And I agreed to it. I moved into a shared house. I spent Christmas on my own. It was horrible. So even though that clip ruined my life, it also saved my life.
Man, I mean, wow. I mean, that's talk about hitting rock bottom at that point. I mean, you know, you're flying high. You've got all of these cruise contracts. You're doing holiday parks. You've runner up in championships, doing really, really well. And then this one moment that just goes, I mean, man, that's wow. Okay. So you're living in a shared house at Christmas. You have no money. You can't even pay your rent. Your girlfriend's left you. Nobody's hiring you. The entire magic community hates you. What's happened to all your illusions? Are they gone? Are they
were locked in a garage. And what saved me was a year later, I applied for a job as an entertainer at a 5-star hotel chain in Greece.
So hang on. Yeah. Hang on, just one second. So that was a year later. So what happened in this year?
So we're saying, like, I spent, Christmas on my own, and I'm frantically looking in the new year for options to save myself, basically.
Did you kind of think at that point, fuck magic, you know, the community's turned against me, you know, all of my bookers have turned against me, this thing that I've loved has literally shit on me, or were you still, I love magic, I'm looking for a way to get this back? And was it?
I've had many jobs over the years, as well as being a professional magician. I've worked in retail and I've done this job and that job just to get by. And I didn't give up. It was a very difficult time, but to be honest, I was completely out of it anyway. I was just looking for options. And like I said, in January the next year, I applied for a job as an entertainer at a 5-star hotel chain in Greece. And they took an interest in me, and not just me, but my magic. And before I knew it, I had signed contracts and they were shipping out my entire illusion show for 6 to 8 months.
Wow.
So things completely full turned. And before I knew it, I was in Greece at this hotel chain doing my illusion show, you know, twice a week. So things did turn full circle. I was still getting slammed by magicians. And so I made a reality illusionist series. It's a 5-part series called Reality Illusionist on YouTube. And I tried to sort of redeem myself within the magic community of how not just an illusionist performs, but how he, you know, like, the day-to-day tasks of a magician, like behind the scenes type show, to try and, you know, gain some respect. So
did that work?
Yeah, it did.
Or was it all the community still shitting on you?
they'll always be shitting on me, but it gave me some, you know, credit. So it's on there if people want to view it. It's Reality Illusionist. It's a 5-part series. It takes you behind the scenes. It's a little bit far-fetched in places, but give it a view. It's a good view.
Okay. You're in Greece. You're doing your illusion show. You're trying to win the graces back of the magic community. What happens then? What's, you know, what happens at the end of the contract?
So obviously, you know, the contract came to an end and I came back to the UK. and had to try and rebuild my career within the holiday parks. An agent tried to put me on a cruise ship, and unfortunately I had a problem with my look at the time, so they cancelled all my dates and I went to work at a holiday park as a general entertainer. And I had always planned on getting back out there. You know, it was just a slow process. So I did a season at a holiday park. I actually went back to Marvin's Magic and did really well working for them in Hamleys, Harrods, Selfridges. I was demonstrator of the month and, you know, won a few awards within the company. And the whole idea was just to get back out there. And the following year, I got myself a season at Creeley Theme Park, where I was doing a daytime show and an evening show, which really redeemed myself as a, you know, entertainer. I got to do my magic show at the Piazza stage at this theme park, which most magicians dream of. To have your own show at a theme park is like really respectable. Ooh. So yeah, it was, you know, things were getting back up there. And by the end of the season at the theme park, I got myself into panto. I was playing a main character in a big pantomime. And then the following year, I went out to Cyprus and did the hotels in Cyprus, you know, working on my act, doing my flight time and getting it ready for the holiday parks. And after Cyprus, I came back and did the train to Christmas Town, which is a 10 carriage train. And I was playing a character called Jack Frost, this time doing close-up magic.
Wow.
So I'm doing close-up magic through a 10-carriage moving train where they're all drinking hot chocolate and eating cookies. And I'm going around doing the close-up magic dressed as Jack Frost. And we'd do that show three times a day. You know, it was incredible. So the train to Christmas Town was pretty awesome. And then we got into 2020 and boom, lockdown.
Yeah. Which is screwed up pretty much everybody.
So I just bit the bullet and got myself a job in retail. I went to work in Superdrug and did that for 6 months and then took the challenge of getting back out there. And I was lucky because I got myself a gig around Halloween time and I got back out there on the road doing the holiday parks and hotels. And that's pretty much what I've been doing this year.
Okay. Right. Let me ask you a few questions. Let's just reverse a little bit. When the magic community came down on you like a ton of bricks, which they did you feel kind of like, cause I remember, I don't know what it was, but I remember like, you get into a real argument on Facebook with a bunch of magicians. Do you remember that moment?
Yeah.
Like, that's something that a lot of people talk about. I hope you don't mind me bringing it up.
Absolutely.
And tell me. But I know this is something that's talked about an awful lot. There was a moment on Facebook where, like, most of the UK magicians were arguing with you. And it was around about Blackpool time because you were talking about going to Blackpool or something like that. Was that... What happened there, Alex, if you don't mind me asking? Because that's...
Yeah, I think when you're young and you're growing up in the world of magic, you know, you don't quite understand things fully. And, you know, when Facebook was taking off, I was getting looked at quite a lot. You know, people were sort of looking into Facebook and seeing what I was doing. And yeah, unfortunately, things did kick off on Facebook. It was a long time ago. I can't really remember what it was all about, but I remember trying to defend myself and everyone having a go at me and, it, you know, it all kicked off. So yeah, unfortunately, you know, I think the magic community has moved away from those long threads of attacking each other. I don't know. I don't really keep an eye on it. I'm sure you spark quite a bit of controversy yourself, Craig. So you know what it's like. You had to leave the magic scene and go away and then come back. And I'm the same. You know, I've tried to sort of redeem myself and keep myself to myself. I know who my friends are in magic, and it's mainly the top guys. And, you know, just trying to get by and make a living doing magic because that's what we love to do.
Do you still have that desire now to be famous? Like, is that, or are you now kind of content with, you just want to carry on doing what you love?
Yeah.
I imagine, and the reason I bring that up is because I imagine going on that ice program was a desire to push yourself. I mean, obviously it backfired. I couldn't have seen that at all, but it was probably a desire to build Alex Lodge as a brand and get more people, you know.
Yeah, I think as young magicians, we do dream of being famous magicians. And of course, that's a burning desire in all of us. And it probably is still for me now. You know, I think we'd all like to be successful, but I don't really think fame's everything it's cracked up to be, you know, because there's a lot of pressure on these big celebrities, whether you're in magic or film or television. You know, if the media are following you around all the time and delving into your life and trying to get the next big headline and the next story, and you know, it's probably not the nicest reality to be in, because, you know, your life's magnified and you are being looked into for the next story and the next big headline. And, you know, so I don't know if I'd want to be like a huge celebrity. I just enjoy being a professional magician. And, you know, if saying you've been on television helps sell what you do, then that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. Absolutely. 100%. 100%. So I suppose the question is, what's next, Alex? Like, what's next? Because obviously, it's like you say, ever since that kind of crash, you've carried on moving forward and you've carried on doing, I mean, what most magicians would want to do. I mean, you know, going to Cyprus, Greece, traveling the world, going on big stages. I mean, that's something that you've carried on doing.
Yeah.
Where do you want to, what are your goals and your aspirations now?
Right. Well, I did go in for Britain's Got Talent. And
well, that's interesting. Go on, talk to me about that.
So I went in for Britain's Got Talent to try and redeem myself. Five or six years ago.
Okay. Can I just ask one question before you tell us the story? Was it pre-Russ Stevens?
Yes.
Because obviously, there was a period of time where Britain's Got Talent would shit on the magicians. Yeah. And, you know, I did an interview with Dave Allen. Right. And he told the whole story about the duck thing and how they orchestrated that and it was done on purpose. And then
this time I got set up. Again, I thought I'd try and redeem myself by doing Britain's Got Talent, and I got set up to unfortunately again to look bad to make Darcy Oak, a Canadian magician, look good. And I'm sorry, but you rant a lot, Craig. I'm gonna rant now. Why call it Britain's Got Talent if international acts are on it? It doesn't make sense. It's called Britain's Got Talent. So why are international acts on this show? It's not fair on the British acts that want to do well. So I got set up. A number of other magicians got set up, all to make this Canadian.
How did they set you up, Alex, if you don't mind me asking?
So I got buzzed off, and, you know, so did a couple of other acts. And it is, you know, unfortunate, really, but you know, again, why call it Britain's Got Talent if an international act's going to do well on it? It doesn't make sense. It should be a British talent show. But, you know, these things happen, and, you know, I've learned from it again, and we can only keep moving forward. And I did a television show this year called iUma, which is a Romanian talent show, which went a lot better, and it's out in the end of September. It'll be on YouTube. And I flew out to Romania and filmed it, and they compared me to Elvis, which is really random. They said quite a big compliment, really. So, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. You say what's next. I used to be a member of my local magic club before the organizer of it passed away, called the Magicians of Basingstoke. And so I've decided to relaunch it. So if there's any local magicians in Basingstoke that would like to be a member, there is a Facebook page. You can join us at the Magicians of Basingstoke.
Okay, that's cool.
And in the future, I'd like to possibly produce a theatre show, because I've got two halves. I've got my one-man show and the illusion show. That's something I used to do back in the day. So we'll see what happens.
any desire to do talent competitions again? I mean, because Russ Stevens is now king on BBT. I mean, he looks after the acts, you know.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, it would be nice. I think we can all dream of doing Britain's Got Talent and doing really well on it. I think it's a very high-pressured show, and you only have to look at the acts that were on it last year, like Damien O'Brien and, you know, Magical Bones. You have to be a very high standard. I wouldn't say no to it, but then I'd be very aware and have to work with Russ if he would work with me, but it's, you know, a big risk.
Okay. And what about magic competitions? You know, you've done really well in competitions in the past. Would you consider doing that again?
Yes, I am considering entering the Blackpool Family Entertainer of the Year competition next year. And I went last time in 2019, got to see my hero, Lance Burton, and watched the Family Entertainer of the Year. And I thought, hey, you know what? I could do that. Even if I didn't win, it would just be a good experience. Of course, I dream of winning it. We'd all love to win a magic competition. So, yeah, I might give the Family Entertainer of the Year a go next year in Blackpool. And if you're in Blackpool, come and say hello to me. It'd be good to meet many of you.
Absolutely. I'd love to see that, Alex. I really would. I really would. Fantastic. So let me ask you a little bit of, let's see if we can get some advice off you. So for somebody watching this that's new into magic, that would like to make a career out of magic, what advice would you give them?
My advice would be to make sure you learn as much as you can about magic and don't try to be the jack of all trades. You know, if you're going to be a close-up magician or a stage magician, you know, you can work on both, but go and work somewhere first. You know, don't try and do gigging here, there and everywhere, you know, because you've got to work on your craft. You've got to do your flight time. You've got to make sure you know your material well enough. So if you ever do get the opportunity to do these television shows, you've worked on your act. Try and be original. Don't just do everything that everyone's doing. Try and be original with your magic and just go for it. You know, believe in yourself.
That's really cool. And for somebody who wants to put together an illusion act, because obviously that's the thing that's defined you for a very long time. There's very few illusion acts in the UK, especially touring illusion acts. For somebody who's got a burning desire to do the big stuff on stage, have you got any advice with that?
Don't do it.
You know what? I've said that on this channel. I put a video on this channel going, if I could go back in time and give myself some advice, it would be don't put an illusion act together. Because although it's so much fun doing it when you're on stage, the amount of crap that comes with it.
It's like being a you know, like a furniture removal company. You literally, if like yourself, Craig, you've done illusions, trying to get in and out of a venue. And I've been there and I've done it for a few years. Trying to get in and out of venues with big illusions is a effing nightmare. Yeah. You know, yeah. You've got to arrive early. You've got to make sure you can get in. And then once the show's done, you've got to get out with 5 or 6 box illusions. And it is not easy on yourself. It's not easy on your assistant. You know, if you want my advice, look at someone like Matrix, Magic and Illusion Show. You know, he's got 2 dancers and 1 stagehand. You know, they are the big boys at the moment doing the illusions. And you really need a team of people around you to do the illusion show. So that's my advice.
Perfect advice. Perfect advice. Absolutely perfect. You know what, Alex? This has been an incredible interview. It really is. I anticipated that. I really was looking forward to doing this because obviously you've got such a story to tell. I mean, you really have. And it's kind of inspiring that, you know, you've had high, like we said at the very beginning of the interview, you've had highs, you've had lows. I don't know of a magician that's had more of a low than what you just described there. Like, that would have written off pretty much. I think that would have written off me, to be perfectly honest. I've been through a lot, but with what you went through there, I think I would have been out for the count at that point. No. And the fact that you're still here and you're still performing and you're still putting yourself out there It's incredible. It really is. It shows a certain amount of intestinal fortitude, and I think you're a little bit like me. You're too dumb to quit, right?
Yeah. We don't give up. You know, if you get knocked down, you've got to get back up again. And that's what it's all about. Getting back up again, taking the blows. Show business is a cutthroat industry. You're going to have highs. You're going to have lows. You've got to get back up again. You've got to keep believing, because you're the only person that will believe in yourself, and you've got to keep dreaming.
Man, that's inspiring words, and it is very, very true. And I think a lot of people these days, they come into magic thinking it's going to be easy. Like, oh, I'm going to become a magician. It's an easy gig. Just go out and do a couple of gigs on the weekend, and you know, I'll make more than I do as a full-time magician. Yeah, a full-time salary or whatever. And that can happen, but it doesn't happen overnight. You've got to work hard for it, right? You got to work hard.
You've got to have thick skin.
You really have. You really, really have. You really have. You know what, Alex? Where can people follow you? I want to shine a light on some of your socials. So we've talked about your YouTube channel. I'm going to put a link. All of the links are going to be down in the description, but we'll flash it up on the screen as well.
Like my page, Alex Lodge Illusionist. And if you want to join us for the Magicians of Basingstoke, you can follow us for that. If you want to see an old website where I look like David Penn with blonde hair, you can check out my old website, alexlodge.com. And if you want to add me as a friend on Facebook, then please do.
That's awesome. That's absolutely fantastic. Alex, thank you so much for coming on Magic TV.
Thank you for having me, Craig.
No, man, it's been incredible. It really has. And the next time we see each other, I'm going to buy you a beer. I really am, because, you know, and hopefully this is going to put to bed all of the questions and all of the animosity and all of that. And I think that hopefully everybody can get back to doing what magic's all about, which is friendship and camaraderie and being a brotherhood, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're a community, a unique, special community, and let's just be kinder to one another, because I have been there and I have taken the blows, and I tell you what, it's not nice, especially when you're a young guy coming up in this game. It's not easy, but luckily I'm strong and I don't give up. And you know, my advice is just try to be careful with it, because magic is an art and we must protect it. You know, it's no joke that I had these unfortunate things happen to me over the years. You know, we've got to be careful. We've got to protect our secrets, and we've got to look after the art of magic and move forward together.
What an incredible way to end the interview. Alex Lodge, thank you so much for coming on the channel. Really,
thank you for having me, Craig.
Guys, make sure that you leave a comment down below and Alex will see it. Subscribe to the channel, leave a comment down below. I'm going to be back tomorrow with another 3 videos.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.